Rich, I'm an addict. I was just going through this little the pamphlet here of the meeting list, and I was like, dang man, I came all the way out here and was expecting a full room, and I was like, and my girl was like, are you nervous? I'm like, no, you know, and so I just didn't get nervous. Most of the time I do when I come to a place like this. The last place I spoke was at a rehab in Phoenix. And I thought I was going to little H&I. You know, it's usually like four people that are, you know, detoxing and are asleep anyways. And I walk into this place and there's like 120 guys in this room. And I felt like I was tricked. But I was looking at these, some of these, the names on some of these workshops. And it made me think about, like, there's a few names on there that I thought about, the people that I know, and it brought me some actual peace. And I thought for a minute right here, I said, I was thinking about how grateful I was that I was actually at a meeting right now, and how I hadn't really felt that, you know, since this whole COVID thing kind of started. I mean, I get little bits, but so first of all, you know, my name's Rich, and my clean date's 3/23/2013. I remaining teachable. I knew when I got clean right here at Hillside in Prescott, Arizona, man. And I remember the day that I was going. You know, I wanted to use, and I just knew. I was like, man, this is gonna be my last. Like, this is going to be my last time. And I don't know how it happened. I just ended up not using before I went into rehab. And I didn't know that that was going to be the last time. I didn't know that I grabbed the winning lottery ticket. You know what I mean? That's crazy. And I got out of rehab. So on day 13, the obsession to use drugs left me. It was a huge, you know, a huge thing, because it happened once before, like a year and a half before when I got out of jail. And I just went to meetings. I didn't do any work. I wasn't teachable. And I ended up relapsing, man. And I spent the next year trying to get clean but wanting to use. And it was a horrible thing. So it's one thing, you know, when you get clean and you don't have a desire to use. It's a completely different thing when you want to get clean but you want to use. And so when I got that gift at day 13 at the rehab here, I knew what to do, and it was the opposite of what I had done. And so I went and called my sponsor, what became my sponsor, and I said, look, bro, I'm going to be Mr. Recovery. And he's like, yeah, well, just call me when you get out of rehab. And he hung up the phone. And then I wanted to leave, man, because it was hard for me. And it was really hard for me because I knew I had to be an example, and I wanted to be teachable. And what I saw going on in the rehabs was just, you know, everybody messing around, and it was just a big joke, and everybody's, you know, having sex and smoking cigarettes and doing drugs and just all the things that I knew that if they were taking it as a joke in there, it was going to be a joke in the real world. And so I just made a decision to be an example. I got out, man, and I went there. The suggestion was to go to a meeting. I really didn't have to be suggested. I just went to a meeting. It was Sunday, and I never forget it, man. It was at Freedom House in Conwood, Arizona, and there was like 40 or 50 people there, man, and they were just, you know, like some of the people were dressed up as like, I don't even know, you know what I mean, the outfits. But I felt welcome, and it was a great time. And then what ended up happening was there was a Sedona fundraiser the next week in Sedona for the ARCNA convention, for the StarPass convention, the last one that they had at StarPass in Tucson. And people were jumping off cliffs and all of that, man, and I was, you know what I mean, like some Red Lions and Red Bulls. And at that point in time, I chewed and smoked and vaped. And it was a blast, you know what I mean? Like killing yourself a little bit slower than, and then we went to this convention, man, in at the Star Pass Hotel in Tucson 8 years ago, and I heard this. I was going to the marathon meetings. I went to like 10 or 15 in a row. My sponsor came in and got me. He's like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, I'm going to meetings. That's what we're here for. And he's like, no, you go to a workshop. And I was like, well, what do you do there? And he's like, you listen to somebody share on the topic. And I was like, why would I want to do that? I want to go share because I have everything. And he just laughed and walked away. And I went into a workshop. And the topic, I think, was when you're done or something like that. And this lady stood up and she said, you know, this program really works when you're done. And then she spelled it out. She's all D-O-N-E, done. It doesn't work before. It only works when you're done. And it hit me. I was sitting there, and there was like 50 people, man, and I felt that. And I was like, wow. And then what ended up happening was that was the spark of recovery that ignited in my heart, that carried me for like 5 or 6 years, just work endless amounts of rounds of step inside and outside of this program, CODA, every other program. I'm talking substance abuse counseling. I'm talking about one-on-one therapy. I'm talking about relationship counseling. I'm talking about going to college and wanting to be a counselor for substance abuse. And I just, suggestions. So obviously they said, don't get in a relationship. And I did. And at the 67 days clean, I was with her for 2 days and I was heartbroken. And I mean, legitimately, you know what I mean? It was heartbroken. And I remember I was at work and I'm like obsessed. Like, what could I have done? You know, like an addict. And I call my sponsor and I'm like, what do I do? He's like, well, you've been getting all those numbers that I've been asking you to get at every meeting. And he's like, I want you to call one of them. And so I called this guy. His name's Matt. Funny story. I just worked with him for the last 2 years up until like 3 weeks ago. And I call him. And I was going to tell him, don't listen, bro. This is serious. I don't know how I'm going to get through this. I know this girl for 2 days. And she told me that we were going to read the basic text together. But that didn't happen. So no, she never said nothing about the basic text. So I call this guy, Matt. He picks up the phone, and I'm caught in the grip. You know when you're caught in the grip clean? Caught in the grip. And I was going to open my mouth to say something, and he just lets me have it about the horror story relationship that he's in and how he's trapped and suffocated, and immediately I felt better. And so what happened was, even though that's a true story, when I got off the phone with him, I said, he's all, what did you want to talk about? And I was like, nothing, bro, I'm good. And I said, you helped me, and I hung up the phone, man, and what I realized was that they tell us about tools in here. So the phone is a tool. And I picked it up at 67 days clean. And just like when I forgot about the obsession to use drugs at 14 days clean, when I got off the phone, I forgot about the pain and the obsession about this girl. And I thought, wow, this recovery thing really works. And I got about 15 minutes of freedom from that before it started again. But I knew that the tool worked. And then just for today program, all I had to do was get through this hour, get through that hour, get to this meeting. And then I go to bed and I wake up. Another day comes, do the same thing. And then before you know it, all that shit that you were all scared about never even happens. And so those are just a few things that I did to remain, you know, to remain teachable. And I continued, you know, I worked my first set of 12 steps in 13 months. And, you know, obviously there's no time limit on those things. The second was, you know, second round of steps was probably around the same time. The third round of steps was a little bit longer because it was on specifically around relationships. I just took out the word drug and I put her in it, and I was able to do a whole round of steps on it. And that really cracked my head open. And rocked my world for a good 3 years, man. And I remain teachable because work and steps revolving around relationships in my life. And, you know, you really, what ends up happening, what happened for me, man, is I ended up seeing my part. I ended up seeing some things that I never even thought were there. Working my four step in my relationships, seeing how like most of my caretakers when I was younger, you know, like betrayed their power and you know, it's called abuse, you know what I mean? It is what it is. And how that carried over into my adult life. You know, and as I still have trouble trusting anyone. And it's better now. But yeah, man, it's crazy. I mean, we go through crazy stuff by the time we get here. Half that stuff that I uncovered, I didn't even know was there. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, I won't even go into that. But so let me just get present and into where I'm kind of at today. So, you know, in March 23rd of next year, I'll have 8 complete years clean. I live in Tempe, Arizona. I work for myself. I have a 4-year-old son. Remaining teachable. So let me run you through what happened with my my son's mother. So I was with this girl, and I met her at a convention fundraiser. Imagine that, in Jerome, and we ended up getting together. And right when we were gonna call it quits, January 1st of 2016, we called it quits. You know, no harm, no foul. It was like we just weren't meant to be. And then I'm in the gym the next day, and my buddy's like, man, you know how lucky you are that you didn't get her pregnant? And right when he said that, I literally got a text on my phone with a pregnancy stick. And it was a rough time for me because what ended up happening is I didn't get to be a part of most of all the things that I want to be a part of. Like when it comes to being a dad, like being there, feeling the baby kick, you know, being a part of the naming process and all of that. I, you know, there was some, you know, circumstances around that. But what ended up happening was I go to my sponsor and I'm like, well, check it out. She's pregnant. So what am I going to do, man? He's like, well, we're going to write a list of your budget right now. And he said, like, we're going to see where you're at. And he's like, because you're not going to be living here no more. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, if she's going to cut you off like that, you got to be like an equal dad, because you definitely want to have an influence on your son's life to where he can grow up and be a responsible individual and not have to treat people that way, right? And I'm like, sure. And so he's like, we wrote a budget. And he's like, okay. And he's like, we want to get a lawyer too, because we want to let, you know, everyone's going to know that you came to play ball. You're not playing around, because this is grown-up stuff now. You're not a kid no more. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, so we need a $3,000 retainer. You got to pay off these credit cards, get your car payment down to here, and we need to pay off your student loan within 9 months. So, and the number was like 10 grand that I needed to save to move and be out there, pay for the lawyer. And he's like, yeah, so we don't make enough. So you're going to get another job, maybe another one. And we went over it, man, and he guided me through the whole process, man. I had 3 jobs. I worked 16 hours a day, and I did it 72 days straight, took 1 day off, and I worked all the way until the baby was born. Paid the lawyer, man, and listen, man, along the whole way, I got to be a part of the whole process. Like the name, I picked the name. I never told her, but she picked the name. But it just happened to be the one that I wanted. When I was at Enchantment Resort in Sedona, and I got my last big check, the exact amount that I needed to pay my lawyer, the seasonal staff came on and they let me go. And it was like God telling me, dude, you're on the right path. Just keep doing what you're doing. And so that job leveled off. And then the next job leveled off. And then I just worked 1 job. And then I wasn't even going to get to be at the hospital for him to be born. And I got my lawyer to work that out for me. And so I got to be at the hospital. Because I guess it wouldn't look good if you got a guy that's doing everything. You know what I mean? I got to be at the hospital, and then I was like devastated that I wasn't going to get to see my son, you know, be born or hold him in the hospital. And from a lady I met in a convention, turned out to be her sponsor. Her sponsor was in the delivery room. And just when I'm like, my heart's breaking because I know my son's being born, I ain't going to get to see him. I get this video from her. And she sent me the video of him being born, right when he was being born. And I'm surrounded by all my guys in recovery at this hospital, my sponsor. And her sponsor sending me the video of my son being born. And it was like, talking about being connected, like the feeling of being connected and loved and knowing that it was a direct result of remaining teachable and staying in the program and doing the next right thing and stepping up and being a good guy and regardless how somebody treats you and it works out, man. Sometimes it doesn't, but most of the time it does. And so, cool, I got 8 minutes. All right. So you fast forward, and obviously I moved down there. Me and her got back together because a guy doing the next right thing for the next right reason. He has a job. He's stepping up. He's a great guy. That's attractive. It's attractive if a girl's doing it. You know what I mean? And it just didn't work out. I reached this place, man. I got with these guys, man, where really money's not an option for, you know, not an issue for them. And I'm making all kinds of money working for myself, man. And I got everything that I ever wanted or thought I could want. I went back to college, you know, and I'm going to marry this girl. And I had the wedding paid for, and I had the ring paid for, and none of it was on credit. I had the wedding paid for, and none of it was on credit. And I had, you know, Uber's amounts of money in my savings, bro. And I'm telling you, bro, I was so broken, like hopeless, like 3.5 years ago. I'm like, what? Like there wasn't another car I could buy. You know, there was no more new pairs of shoes that I could get, man. I got 10 still. I still don't wear them. I got one pair that I wear all the time. I got 10 brand new shoes. They're fucking 5 years old, but I never worn them once. So I reached another bottom, and what that ended up happening was it sparked a whole nother round of steps, and I went through that obviously slower, and then I got through that, man. And right when I thought I was gonna crumble underneath that, man, God swooped in again, and he I decided, you know, I had went back to church. I'm not in church anymore, but I had went back to church because this guy came into my life like right in the moment. And he like. It was a total God thing, and I decided to not get the new car and to not buy the house, even though I could have got the house, and not get the pair of shoes, and I didn't need the new iPhone at that point in time, and I decided to like do some like journaling with this guy spiritually every week for the last 3.5 years, and do some studying on spiritual stuff, man. And the second that I made that decision, dude, he removed all of that pain and all of that anguish and everything that goes along, like with a broken heart, and he replaced it with hope and another pink cloud. And that was great. But what I can tell you is the last 3 years, and now with COVID, I've realized I've been the complete opposite of teachable and closed-minded. And then COVID's really helped it out. Like I was telling some people, man, there's been like, what, 9 months, man? I went to, there was a point in time where it was like 2 months. I went to one Zoom meeting and I was running the show. You know what I mean? I'm not plugged in. I'm not going to any in-person meetings, which is what gets it for me. You know what I mean? Zoom's great and all that, dude, but it doesn't get it for me. I realized, man, I just become really unteachable, and I, you know, and it's really hard for, it's a good lesson, man. I'm only 30, I'm going to be 34 years old, and I really have everything that a guy could want, and none of it's on credit, I entered this place of, I was like, that was supposed to take my whole life. Like, the end result was the house, the car, the kids, the girl. That was the end result. And I never thought I was going to get there at 33 years old. And so I got there, and I didn't know what to do with it because I'm all about the chase. And if there's nothing more that I want. I can't get an iPhone 50 right now. And so I've been struggling with finding passion and a desire to do anything, because I know, I thought money was the thing, man. And now all I know is all it takes is a little bit of hard work, bro. And you can, bro, you can have anything that you want in here. I'm telling you right now, money's the easiest thing to you want. The hardest thing to get is a productive, responsible relationship with another human being. That's the hardest thing. And sometimes you can't work enough to make it work. If it doesn't fucking work, it doesn't work. And that's the hard thing. You know, everything else aside from that, I realize is easy, because I can will it into existence, if you will, in a sense. You know what I mean? Going to work, working hard, and making the money. And it's like that works against me. I'm gonna close it off with that, or I'm gonna start to close it off, because I've been in this stuck place of I'm there again. You know what I mean? I'm pulling out of it now because I'm in love. You know what I mean? I met a really good girl, and I'm gonna marry her, and we're gonna have some kids, God willing. You know what I mean? And we're gonna get a house. She's gonna move in 8 months, and I've had an effortless. So we've been a little over a year, man. We haven't had one hiccup, nothing, not even a faint insecurity. Just, you know, when they say, when it's like, sometimes when it's meant to be, it's just meant to be. And I didn't think that was possible, but it's happened with this girl. But so she's brought in some more love aspects of my life that I really don't like talking about, because I'm not like a lush like that. So that's good. It's bringing me out the slump. But what I'm trying to do right now is, I've been meeting with my sponsor every week, and he made a commitment with me. So we have one meeting in Phoenix that we meet on Monday night, 7, and then on very off week when I don't have my son on Thursday, I meet with him and I go over a step. And so now that keeps me accountable to continue. I just finished another 4-step, and that 4-step took me 1.5 years, and I was on the last 2 questions for 1 year. Yeah, and it was like the moving on question. Like, do you feel that you fully worked the step? Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? And so I'm doing that now. I'm getting plugged back in. I'm going to my meetings. I'm up here speaking. I feel really good about it. I feel really good about this next meeting, this H&I meeting. I'm all about it. I do the 4th Avenue jails in Phoenix. I've done that for 4 years. I go in, I take meetings with the guys in the cells, because that's where I got it, man. And ever since I heard a speaker share at a convention, you know, 8 years ago, I dreamt of the day that I would get the opportunity to come up here and speak, you know, my experience, strength, and hope to anybody. And it may not even, maybe somebody was touched in here, but I can guarantee you one thing that I know for sure, dude, somebody is going to get this tape, whether it's 10 years down the road, they're going to be in the car like me and my buddy Andrew, and they're going to hear they're going to hear something that touch them. It's going to rock their world, man. And so that's what it's about for me. And thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Rich. And now I am pleased to introduce Cece from Cornville.
Man, this is bittersweet for you guys. My name is Cece, and I'm an addict. So when I say that, what I'm trying to say is that when Argna had their first convention, or one of their first conventions way back, they had it at Bucky's Casino, and I came here high. And I would have to go out between meetings to out to my vehicle and, you know, and hit it and come back in. And I wasn't ready to get clean, but I wanted so bad to stop using it. I didn't know how, you know. And I thought, I didn't know anything about Narcotics Anonymous at the time. I saw a little placard somewhere in Prescott about, said Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I thought that if I could come here, I thought it was a secret FBI convention, and it was for narcotics, like undercover officers and how they approach. And so I was like, okay, that's my way in. I can start learning, you know. I had no idea, you know. I didn't know anything about Narcotics Anonymous back then. And so Anyway, so I love being here again, and it's just such a blessing for the community to ask me to share. So remaining teachable. When I first heard that topic, I thought, you know, it's the whole thing about being in recovery and being in Narcotics Anonymous is I realize that I've gotten a couple days clean here. My clean date is August 17th, 2005. And I've been around for a while. In the first couple years, it was all about me, you know, me. And it wasn't until I got about maybe, I don't know, only just about 5 years ago, my recovery, it's not all about me anymore. And now I'm living my program, and I'm becoming, I've become very teachable. And in that teachable process, I have learned the most important thing is to carry the message to the addict and to tell an honest, true story about how recovery worked for me. And I'll just kind of hit and miss a little bit about my story, not too much anymore because it's like, you know, but so we're all here now, and thank goodness. And if you're a newcomer, you are the most important person in the room. So, and if you're just kind of bumping along, just keep coming back. So one of the things that remaining teachable, I'll tell you that the first couple, the biggies that I hit, butted heads with my sponsor. I couldn't, when she told me that CC alcohol is a drug, because when I came in, I was like, well, I'll just keep drinking wine coolers. I'll put the pipe down, but I just still want to drink the wine cooler. So yummy. And, you know, and I said, if you can't put it in your pipe and you can't pour it in there and smoke it, it's not a drug, you know. And so it's like this. And I'm like, no, alcohol. And over time, she said, keep coming back. So I did, and I started to learn that the alcoholism and the drug addiction, it's all the same disease. You know, it's all, we all use because of our feelings. Whatever has happened to us in our past, you know, whether we were abused, molested, this, that, whatever, it's the feelings that we're trying to cover up. And alcohol is the same thing as putting a drug in your body. And I struggle with that for a long time, and so I'm really scientific, and I can get some like meta-analysis going on in my mind, you know, thinking about how can I really prove that, you know. And so before, when I was growing up, you know, so I'm a nurse now, but I wanted to go off and be like a deputy nurse coroner, and I was always interested in autopsies and looking at people when they die and all this weird stuff. So what I did, I went off on my own little tangent like I usually do, and I started doing some research, and I did a deep dive into brain scans and things like that. And I was like, I wonder what happens in an addict's mind, in an alcoholic's mind. I wonder what they look like when they die. And so I was reading these articles and things like that. And you take an alcoholic and you take a drug addict, and they're both dead in their autopsy. And you cut them open, do some brain slices like this, and start looking at their neurotransmitters, okay? They're the same exact ones, the same exact norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin. All, if you were to look in there, it's the same exact. So there's really, what I'm trying to get here is there really is no distinction, and that's what it took for me, between alcoholism and drug addiction. It's all the same. And so in that moment, I realized that, okay, this is what we really need to do in Narcotics Anonymous, is that the unity, quit dividing the andas. You know, like I'm an alcoholic and an addict. If you say that, keep coming back. It doesn't matter. We still love you. You know, it's just like it, the core of my core is that we used to live, lived to use, and we did that because we our feelings were hurt, you know. And so, anyways, moving on. The other thing that I really struggled with is my sponsor. I had a really hard time going from guy to guy when I first came in the program. And she said, she saw that, and she says, Cece, you need to do this thing called a 6 month restriction. And I was like, what? How do people not do it for 6 months in a row straight, abstinent? And she goes, well, you just say no. And I'm like, I don't know how to say no. How do people do that? You know, so I tried it, you know, and I made it like a month or so. And then I said, Christine, I'm sorry, I did it again. She goes, well, why did you do it? Did you touch it? And I said, yes. She goes, if you touch it, it's going to fall. It fell in my mouth. How to get in there? Well, then it fell in the badge. I'm like, God, don't touch it. She says, if you put your hands in there, if you hang out in the barber shop, you're going to get your hair cut, right? You hang out at the bar, you're going to drink. If you hang out at Dude's, you're going to hit it. If you hang out in there, it's going to happen. And I'm like, oh, I can't. So it was so hard for me. And so finally, no, I'm serious. So I butt heads, remain teachable, keep going to meetings, sponsorships. Okay. So I made it another like 3 months, and I'm Christine. And she goes, what happened? And she, and finally, I made 6 months, and it was just like, wow, it was mind-blowing. But let me tell you what happened in that 6 months, okay? She said, this is what you need to do now. You need to get with the women. And lo and behold, I started hanging out with the women in recovery, and I got a different kind of love, you see? And it wasn't like the hit and miss and go love. It was like, they held me like I've always wanted my mother to hold me, you know, those kind of things. They hang on to you until you feel it's like okay to let go of that hug, you know. They taught me how to say no, you know. When I really wanted to say no, when I was in that moment, I went ahead and just let somebody take advantage of my body again, you know. And they taught me that, Cece, you are a queen in your own kingdom, so you need to put on your crown and straighten it out, and you need to decide what is most important to yourself, you know, and learn how to say no. And she says, go to, when's the last time you went to the county and got, whoo, got it checked, you know? So I hadn't got it checked. So I went and got a pap smear for the first time, you know? So I was like 37, I got my first pap smear. And I dusted that, made sure it was clean. You know, I had clean now, it was good. And I didn't want nobody else in there because it was my spiritual body. It was my sanctuary, my temple, you know? And little things like that. And she goes, well, you know, go take care of your teeth, get your glasses, get a flu shot, you know, start taking care of your body, you know. And so I learned how to do that. And finally, I started learning how to love myself and learning how to be in a relationship without having to touch it first, you know, and having meaningful, intimate relationships with men. And I've got some great men in recovery now. You know, sure, I look at them still and say, oh, God, I wish. But we don't do that in recovery, you guys. Men are like my brothers. I mean, you guys, because this is real. This is life or death here, you guys. Really, it is. And so that's just one of my remaining teachable, you know. And I never knew that's what a 6 month restriction meant. What it really means, you guys, is getting to love yourself, getting to know yourself, and letting other women love you and learning how, you know, to go back and forth, reciprocate that love with another woman. And so moving on, that was a toughie. I just remained teachable. Another one that I was really struggled with was when I first came into Narcotics Anonymous. I had a really good friend, Kim. She's passed away now, but she came in, and she was on the methadone maintenance program. And that I really struggled with that because I was like, if you go to Narcotics Anonymous, you have to be clean. You have to be abstinent, and, you know, this is the way it has to be. And so what I was learning, I struggled with that for a long time too, because I was like, oh, I can't hang out with her because she's doing methadone, and she's, you know, nitpicking, like tearing it apart. And I was like, and then she passed away, and I was so sad. She was on methadone because she had pancreatic cancer and whatnot. And I was so upset because I was so judgmental on that person, you know. And she passed away, and I said, I was praying to God. I said, please, God, please bring me somebody else that is in that, that comes into Narcotics Anonymous that has to be on a substance in order for them to live. You know, how am I going to understand this concept? Because I feel that Narcotics Anonymous, thank goodness for the third tradition, you know, the only requirement for membership is desire to stop using. That's the only requirement. So, how am I going to learn? How do I understand that whole process? And I was praying to God, please, I just want one person. And so what happened, lo and behold, is I got this fabulous job working as a nurse at a treatment place. And I now work for a lady who does the medication-assisted therapy program. And I learned all about doing the Suboxone and the Naloxone and buprenorphine and methadone and all this other stuff. And I'm learning that it has nothing at all to do with, you know, like trading one drug for another. It's all about, like, the Suboxone. The people don't even get high when they do it. They have this other drug in there called Naloxone, and it blocks the euphoria. And so And then when they're taking all these other prescribed drugs, you know, it's like I get so mad. I get on my soapbox because people come in, they say they can't find a sponsor or something like that because they won't sponsor me because I'm doing this or whatever. And it just breaks my heart. But I'm not here to judge anybody in Narcotics Anonymous that does that. But so now I am so fortunate I get to work with a whole group of women that are on this and also have some very, very good recovery. And that was so important for me. So when I broke through of having to judge those people, I lived in like this, again, a separation. It's like, well, they're doing that, and they can't be in NA, and over on here, and it's, you know, you have to be abstinent from everything, and it so doesn't have to be that way. And you so don't have to be clean for the first time when you come in. I mean, I came in, it took me 3 tries, you know, to come in, and I finally got it, but if you have to be on medication, then good, that's between you and your doctor. And so I learned that, and that was a real struggle for me. And thank goodness I got the awareness so I don't have to judge. I'm going to talk about forgiveness a little bit. This has kind of been a really precious subject for me. Remaining open, remaining teachable with forgiveness. I went through a pretty bad childhood, molested by my stepdad, and for the longest time I held resentment and wasn't able to forgive him. And what I was expecting, I wanted him to come to me and say, Cece, I am so sorry I did this to you, and I understand now why you used meth for so long because of the shame and guilt and this and that and everything. But I never got that from him. I never got that. And the teachable aspect with forgiveness is that you don't know when it's going to come. You know, you have to just wait for it. And so after all this time, I've been in recovery. My stepdad just approached me actually yesterday at the Thanksgiving table. He leaned over, and I know this might not touch a lot of people, but he says, is it okay if I come to church with you tomorrow? And I was like, oh, my gosh. I was like, I was so blessed when he said that. And that was his way of offering his forgiveness. And he might not ever say the words that I want, but when he said that to me, I was just like, it was so, so good, so sweet. So I'm going to go to church with my dad on Sunday and sit next to him. And I think it's come full circle, you know. And in Narcotics Anonymous, what I've learned in this fellowship is patience, the spiritual principle of patience. You have to wait. You have to wait. You have to wait. And if it's not God's time for you to get that precious gift, whatever it is you want so hard, you just have to wait for it, you know. And here it is 14 years later, even longer than that now. I've been clean for 14 years, but way before I held a resentment, and I think Sunday is going to be our time, and it's going to be great. Anyways, you guys, I want to close with a good story. So I'm a nurse, and I lost my nursing license because I was an addict. I was a first-year nurse, LPN. And I was using meth for a super long time, going to work high. Finally, they did a drugs random UA throughout the facility, and I tested dirty. So the State Board of Nursing said, Cece, we're going to take away your license. You're never going to work again as a nurse. You could either do this recovery program over here, or you could, you know, just take, you know, you're not going to be a nurse again. So I chose recovery, and went to Hillside Like Rich and did the whole process and earned my LPN license back. And so I got my LPN license back, and I really wanted to be an RN, okay? So I was like, I want to be a hospital nurse one day. That's what I really want to be, you know? And so I get my LPN license back, and I go to work, and I'm working in this nursing home, and I don't want to work there because it's like the bottom of the barrel place to work, you know? It's like I was in the there are elder people. I love old people, but sometimes they're like neglected. And so I go there, and I'm doing this. I'm learning how to take care of wounds, okay? And it was just a disgusting ass job because these are like wounds that old people, they leave them and they're abandoned, and they get wounds down to their bone and things like this, and wounds in their fistula and their anus, and it's just disgusting. So, but I learned how to take care of wounds really good. And so I was working at this nursing home. I was going to meetings. I was had a sponsor doing service work. It was terrible, this drudging job I had to go to every day. And And finally, she says, well, why don't you go back to school and try to get your RN? And I said, oh, my gosh, I can't do it. I can't. She goes, yes, you can. What do you know about Narcotics Anonymous? You ask people for help. So I go there, and I start going back to school. And I'm working in this as an LPN still and taking care of wounds and going to meetings and remaining teachable. And all this stuff is coming together. And so I get my rights restored and get the felonies off my thing and get a fingerprint clearance card and get all these restoration. When you lose your license, you get taken away from the privilege of practicing and with Medicare funding. So I got that back. And so I'm getting all these things back. And I'm getting through nursing school, cruise along, doing things, staying clean. I graduate with my RN, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm there. I got it. I'm going to be this great RN at the hospital. And they didn't hire me. And I was like, oh, so I'm still stuck at this nursing home taking care of these gross wounds. I was like, oh, God, I can't stand it anymore. And then I got the call. Woo! And they said, Cece, we'd like you to come work for us. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be a hospital nurse. Woo! So I get there, and I'm working. And I'm working on this med-surg unit, and I hear this guy, and he's screaming, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be a perfect nurse. I'm going to go in there. Oh, what would you like? Da, da, da. You know, and I'm there, and the other nurses are like, Cece, don't pay attention to him. He's a drug addict. You know, don't pay attention to him. He's just a homeless guy. Don't even worry. You know, blah, blah. So I go in there, and sure shit, there's this man, and he's in the bed, and he's laying there. And he's probably about 23 or 24 and obviously homeless, hair matted, rotted teeth, smelly, clothes on. He didn't have a hospital gown or nothing. And he's, I need some medication and I need it now. Where's my drugs? Blah, 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 blah. And we lock eyes. And I said, I'm your nurse and I'm going to take care of you. You know, don't worry. So I go and I get him some medication. And about 30 minutes later, he starts crying and screaming again. I need my medication. Where's my nurse? And I go in there, and I said, something else is wrong with this guy. You know, and so I roll up his sleeves, and he's got, from doing IV drug use, he's got the MRSA wounds, like big boils coming, and they're infected sores. And I'm like, that's why he's hurting so bad. Nobody has noticed this guy has. So I'm like, okay, first thing we got to do, we got to get you out of bed, and we got to give you a shower. And this is like, oh, why? So the thing about being a nurse and being an addict and these things, you got to be humble, and God puts you in these places at the right time and the right place for this very moment to happen. So I get him up out of bed, and I swear to God, I see bed bugs jumping everywhere, and it's gross. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to get infected. And so I've got this kid, and I'm getting him undressed. And I get him undressed, and he sits down on the toilet, and out comes his penis, and he's got a huge, huge sore on his penis, and you could tell that's where the last time he was using drugs, he tried to hit himself in the vein there. That's the last vein that was left, and it was infected. And I sat him down the toilet, and he started to cry. And I said, oh my God, you know, what's wrong? And he goes, that's the last place I used. And I said, listen, we locked eyes. And I said, listen, here's the thing. I'm an addict too. And he started crying. And I start crying. And I've got his penis in my hand. And we're both crying. And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, why am I in this place? And I'm like, oh, shit. And he goes, I never want to use again. And I said, I'm an addict. You don't have to use again. And we're going to get your penis. We're going to take care of it. And I'm like freaking out. And I pulled the code card, the cord that you know, for a code blue for someone's in respiratory shock. And you got to save them. And you need all the doctors in the room, like right here and right now. So I pulled the cord. Woo, lights flashing, everybody's running down the hall, the code cart, the respiratory therapist, all these people in the room, and I'm in there, and I'm holding this man's penis, and I said, we've got to get this guy into surgery, or he's going to lose his penis, and the doctor was like, oh my God, and sure enough, you know, it was bad, because it was rotted all the way down to that, yeah, through the corpus spongiosum, and you know, men, you know your penis, so, you know, so what I'm trying to say, and I've got this guy's penis in my hand, and the doctor says, okay, we got to get him into surgery. So we take him down and they whisk him off to surgery, you know, and they do some deep breathing and some deep wounds. And so he comes up on the unit. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was working as a night nurse at that time. And he comes back, he's sedated and stuff, and he wakes up, And I get to do the first dressing change. And I'm like, thank you, God. This is why I worked at that nursing home for so long, learning how to take care of wounds. And so I did his first dressing change, and I open it up, and I'm so tender taking care of it. And I'm telling you. And taking care of it, and I have to show the other nurses, you know. And I have to show the other nurses how to do this specific dressing with the hydrophilic, the Vaseline, and everything in there to keep it moist, and this and that and everything. So... where I'm going with this, track with me. So here it is. Here's the thing. All this time leading up to this, okay, well, I understand now. I was remaining teachable. How I came into Narcotics Anonymous and got my nursing license back and had to do the wound healing. And here's this addict. I'm taking care of his penis. And I was like, oh, you know, it's like all this. And so the whole thing about it is he did get well, he did get discharged, and on he went. Didn't think about him for whatever. I hadn't seen him forever. And you guys, it was a couple weeks ago, because I remember sharing the story in Jerome, and I was thinking about this guy. I didn't think I was ever going to see him again. Well, guess what? I did. I saw him not too long ago, and I was in Starbucks. Where was I? I was in line in somewhere. Yes, in Sedona. That's all I'm going to, because I don't want to give his anonymity. So anyway, so there's this man, and he's standing in front of me. And I didn't recognize, just this whatever, you know, good-looking guy, short hair, would have never noticed. And this other lady standing next to him, young gal, she looked a little pregnant or whatever. So he turned around to get a sugar like that. And I was like maybe the eighth or ninth person back in line. And he turned around, and he looked up, and we locked eyes. And I seen him. And you never know. When you lock eyes with an addict, you know, you look deep in their soul. You know, you just don't, like, look at them for a second. You know, because in an addict, we see each other across the room. We know. You know, and he screams, he goes, oh my God, it's my nurse. And I'm like, oh my God, how's your penis? You know, and then he's like, oh my God, my penis is great. And I'm like, it was such a pleasure taking care of your penis. How's it going? And the girl turned, and he's this is my girlfriend, and she's 6 months pregnant. And my penis works. I was like, thank you, God. And I was like, thank you, Jesus. And I was like, that is why it is such a blessing, you guys, to be a nurse in recovery and to have the precious gift of recovery. Because had I not gotten clean myself and learned how to, you know, get my license back and be an RN and take care of wounds and da-da-da and associate with that addict, you guys, this is the true gift of recovery, okay? So that's why I'm saying it's so important to remain teachable, you know? And so hopefully I'll be able to see him again. We exchanged numbers and whatever. So what ended up happening is he went down to celebrate recovery and got some fellowship there and whatnot. So anyways, you guys, this is such a blessing to be here today. I don't really know if I talk too much about remaining teachable, but the whole point is, I'll get around to it eventually, is that if you stay around here long enough, you will understand, you will come to realize that the little stupid things that we do, you know, show up and suit up and like the 6 month, you know, absent thing and all these little dilly-dally things that we go through is to make you come into yourself, to make you come into your own kingdom, because the true principle that I've learned here is that I've got to carry the message now to the other addict. And the more I remain open and teachable and learn all these little steps and all these traditions and everything like that, it's not about me anymore. It's about taking care of the next addict coming into the room. And so now I think that my years going forward in my recovery is all about getting out of myself and not being selfish, giving of my time, and helping the other addict come along. Because the other addict, they're going to have an awesome message to share for the next person. And I just have, let me just throw a little plug in for my little girls. I am so proud of my little sponsorship tree. It is so awesome. I mean, by them remaining teachable, by me remaining teachable, them remaining teachable, one is going to U of A very prestigious school that I didn't even get accepted to. One has found the man of her dreams, getting married. My other little girl over here is becoming an independent woman in recovery. I'm so proud of them. Oh my God. And it just makes me leak. It does, because I just can't hold back my joy and my gratitude, you know, for being a person in Narcotics Anonymous. forgiving other people the gift of freedom. That's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Just give another round of applause for our two workshop speakers.